You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 228 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Sensational Wonder Woman number 7, Batman Catwoman number 3, Future State Catwoman number 2, Future State Immortal Wonder Woman number 2, Future State Nightwing number 2, Future State Shazam number 2, Future State Superman Worlds of War number 2, Future State The Next Batman number 4, Batwoman Season 2 Episode 4, Fair Skin Blue Eyes, and Black Lightning Season 4 Episode 2, The Book of Reconstruction, Chapter 2, Unacceptable Losses. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC has announced the digital series Batman 89 by Sam Hamm and Joe Quinones, and Superman 78 by Robert Venditti and Wilfredo Torres. Both titles will debut 6 digital chapters on July 27th, with 6 additional chapters arriving weekly after that. Once all 12 chapters of each story have been released, they'll be collected in 6 traditional comics released between August and October, and then as a hardcover collected editions in October for Batman 89 and November for Superman 78. I gotta tell you, Cletus, when I first saw the announcement for that, I was really excited. And then when I saw Superman 78 was being written by Venditti, I was like, oh no. So we're gonna have Clark arguing with people.
I maybe it could be good. It would be unlike anything that I've read of his, but I suppose it's possible.
I'm gonna keep an open mind, check them out, see how I like them.
I do think it's a good idea. I mean, especially just releasing them digitally, I feel like that's pretty low stakes risk by DC. And I feel like Batman 66 would be considered a success overall. So why not try out a few other ones, especially with the relative low stakes of digital only?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm betting we're going to see more digital, a lot more digital series coming from DC. I think they're trying. Well, I think we've talked about this before. They're trying to cut back on paper editions and lean more into digital editions. So I'm sure we'll see more of those. Coming up next for DC News, HBO Max upcoming animated series Aquaman King of Atlantis debuts a splash of what's to come in the animated adventures of Arthur Curry. And I don't know anything about this cartoon, Cletus, except that it looks like it was drawn by the animators of the Fairly Odd Parents. Because I thought Arthur and Mira looked super weird, especially with Aquaman having his green hair. I don't know if you saw that article or not.
I did. I did see an image of it. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about the show, but I'm intrigued, mostly because, like, I don't know. I'm assuming based on the art style, it's trying to skew younger. But it's an interesting pick. I'm kind of curious to see what they do with the show.
Yeah, me too. I'll be checking it out, but it looks like it's going to be a goofy one to me. All right, coming up next for DC News, The Flash movie casts Young and the Restless star Sasha Calais as Supergirl.
Okay. Good for her. I think the movie probably is actually getting made, but that Flash movie has been cursed, man. I just don't believe it until they're actually done filming that movie and it is actually coming out. Well, I believe that movie is coming out.
You know what I thought was weird? I saw some people complaining that Melissa Benoist wasn't going to be Supergirl in the movie. I'm like, are you guys not paying attention to DC News? She's starting her own company.
Well, and also, it's not supposed to be set in the CW world. Why would, like, even if she had a cameo appearance, it would only ever be that. I'm assuming that this Supergirl might have a slightly larger role than just a simple cameo. So why wouldn't you cast a new actress for that? That just makes sense to me. Because, like, for example, I wouldn't necessarily be, if the movie does happen, which again, I don't believe, I wouldn't be shocked if Grant Gustin showed up. But again, it would kind of make sense, right? Because it would be a small cameo, you know, with alternate worlds. That makes sense. But with the Supergirl thing, again, at best, it would be a small cameo and she'd have to show up at the same time that Grant's character showed up. And then that just starts to get a little muddled, I think. Because then you're basically just, it's less of a Flash shout out thing and more of just a general, hey guys, the CW-verse exists.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess we'll see what happens. They're casting people, so it looks like they're trying to move forward with it. But
I know. The movie's probably getting made, to be clear. It went through so many directors and so many different iterations of what the movie was going to be. I'm dubious.
We know you're pessimistic. All right. Up next for DC News, HBO Max and Bad Robot Productions are reportedly teaming up for a Constantine TV show, which could be headlined by a biopic performer.
I'm fine with it. It's confusing for certain characters like that aren't a superhero identity, right? Like John Constantine isn't like Batman, right? Batman is a symbol, right? So we're seeing that in Future State right now. We have a black Batman. And it works fine for me. I have absolutely no problem with it because it's Batman. And like you can throw, or the show Batwoman, you can throw somebody else in the suit. John Constantine is just a dude. Like his name is just John. So I find it interesting when they recast characters like that. I don't really care though. I mean, like it's fine. I'm a little bit surprised. I feel like there were potentially other characters that they could have picked that already existed, like or for example, they could have done the new Dr. Fate, right? I know he's not the exact same character, but you can do a magical show with a character of color, and you're not even changing anything, and you're doing something that hasn't been done already.
Yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't really matter to me that much, but I'm used to Matt Ryan right now, so yeah. Seeing somebody else in the role will be kind of weird. So
I agree. And again, I'm really not upset at all by this. I just worry that things like this, like I know you probably really shouldn't care about their opinion, but at the same time, like you risk pissing a lot of people off with something like this when you could just not upset people and pick a character. I think that you could have more easily step into that role. Like I said, I think picking the new Dr. Fate would be an excellent example of that.
And it'd be awesome to get a Dr. Fate show.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Again, they're not exactly this. You're going to get a different character because Constantine is obviously an anti-hero, you know, kind of a jerk, but still doing the right thing. Ultimately, you're going to get something different, obviously, if you're picking Dr. Fate, but it would be really interesting, right? Like I still feel for apart from how the main character acts, I feel like a lot of the stuff could be the same. I think it could be really interesting. So again, that's just my personal taste. Like, I just think it would be interesting if you did a show with Dr. Fate. But again, it's fine. I just wonder if there are other characters that already exist that we could be picking that maybe deserve a chance to be put in the spotlight, and maybe they aren't as popular as Constantine, but maybe they haven't been given the chance to be yet.
And it's kind of weird that they're already launching another Constantine show when they just canceled the other one not too long ago.
I mean, to be fair, the other one was, I think, a Fox show? Or maybe NBC? I can't remember. It was one of the two. And this would be HBO Max, so it is not the same. It's not like the same TV company is doing it twice.
That's very true. Being on HBO Max, they could go a lot more darker and, you know, it's not the same.
Actually show them smoking?
Yeah.
They couldn't smoke. That was always the running joke. They couldn't show, like, one of, like, the main things with his character, and they couldn't have him do it.
Yeah. They could definitely do that on HBO Max. All right, up next for DC News, John Wesley Shipp will reprise his role as Jay Garrick in Episode 9 of Stargirl's second season. Shipp's Garrick will appear in a pivotal flashback episode. I was very excited to see that news.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's really cool. I'm also glad to see that they're actually, well, they lied and said that Flash and Green Lantern were going to be a part of the show, and then they weren't at all. So I am glad to see them at least doing the Flash one, which is certainly easier to do also.
Yeah. I hope we get Green Lantern too. That'd be awesome.
I'm a little bit surprised that they did. I get from an effect standpoint why they didn't do him or her, depending on what they want for the new one, because I'm assuming they'd do a new one. But I'm a little bit surprised because that's one of the ones that's easy to, like, have a new person be that character. Right? Like, the Flash is when I questioned, when we were reviewing the show initially, how they were going to pass on the mantle, because it's not like you just throw on his helmet and all of a sudden you're the Flash. Green Lantern, you can do that, though. You literally just slip on the ring and then you're the new Green Lantern. So I'm a little, from that sense, I'm surprised that that's not one of the ones that they picked, because it fits into what they're trying to do with the show. But from an effect standpoint, I do understand.
Yeah, I could see that, too. All right, up next for DC News, Black Lightning spinoff show Painkiller adds three more to the cast. Sibongile Malambo will play Maya, a mysterious and cold leader. Alexander Hodge will play Filkey, a former Gotham citizen with a rough past that helps Khalil as his tech master. James Rock will play Cousin Donald, a former Marine medic who's someone who understands Khalil better than anyone else, as he has a similar duality. The casting makes me wonder. I'm very curious what Painkiller show is going to be. I doubt if he's going to be in Freeland. It feels like he's going to be somewhere else. Definitely an anti-hero that's dealing with his, you know, is he a villain, is he a hero kind of thing.
Yeah, I just think it would make sense for it not to be in Freeland, because if it is, then you're kind of like, you almost have to have Jefferson Pierce show up, right? I mean, unless the guy dies this season, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So plus it's just like, if he's trying to like start over and start a new life again, all of it just makes more sense if he were to be in a new town. And then I totally agree with you on the other, like, he's going to be, for sure, be an anti-hero. Feels like he's going to be a little bit like the Punisher in a sense.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, Superman and Lois 2-hour premiere event airs Tuesday, February 23rd. Or as Cletus and I know it as, tomorrow.
I'm really excited to check out the show.
I am too, and I was watching Batwoman yesterday. I was watching Batwoman yesterday and saw a preview for it. So it looks pretty cool. I also saw a preview for The Flash. I saw three previews for The Flash. It was all the same one, but I was like, man, they're really advertising The Flash. So I'm excited for that to come back. We got about another week out for that one.
Yeah, I'm excited for both of those shows to come out. I don't know that I'm interested in watching whatever the special is afterwards for Superman, but I'm certainly interested in the show itself.
I know I'll watch the special, so it goes without saying. It'll probably be one of those things that I sit through and be like, okay, why did I watch this for? I didn't need to.
Yeah. I feel like I've learned my lesson enough times that I don't need to do that to myself again.
All right. Well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Here at the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, we make every show from the finest ingredients.
Juicy interviews, fiery film nights, delicious desert island DVDs.
And pack it all into a slice of life in every episode.
Order up our specials now from your delivery guys.
Sean from Canada.
Dan from Kent in the UK.
And Paul from near Liverpool in the UK.
Here on the ESO Network.
The Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Serving you a slice of life.
Mmm.
But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
Let's talk Sensational Wonder Woman number 7. So the issue opens up in Washington, D.C. at the second annual Pan-American Conference on Climate Trends and Food Security. Wonder Woman is talking to a couple that owns a farm that is going through a drought. Now, when Wonder Woman returns to the conference, a woman is speaking about the drought, and she states that the problem isn't that there is no rain, but it falls in the wrong places, and her company has a solution. Now, the woman states that they're going to perform a demonstration today and calls forward the farmers Wonder Woman was talking to. Now, during the demonstration, rain turns to hail, and the group takes cover until Wonder Woman sees a monitoring device that looks familiar to her. She chases it down, and the occupant starts attacking her. Wonder Woman traps one of them in her lasso, where she learns that Blue Snowmen hired them. The Blue Snowman. I was wondering if you knew who the heck this character
no,
was.
No, I legitimately laughed when I read that. I was like, what? I cannot be. And the way they presented it is if like obviously we would know that.
I know. Like, I don't know.
Like most people reading it weren't like, well, what the hell is Sub-Zero doing in this comic? That doesn't make. Or sorry, Mr. Freeze.
Now, I actually did. I did look up the history of Blue Snowman because it felt like we were supposed to know that who that person was.
Wow.
And I found out this villain was created by William Moulton Marston himself and debuted in Sensational Comics number 59 in November 1946. So that's how old this character is.
I mean, yeah, the villain's name is Blue Snowman. If that's a modern villain, that has to be a joke villain.
So, yeah, I was very surprised to learn that this character had been around for a while.
That's phenomenal. Again, same as you, I just was stunned when they were like, it's Blue Snowman, of course. I was like, what are you talking about? Imagine if Blue Snowman had showed up a villain in Wonder Woman 84. Everybody, fans and non-fans alike, would have been like, what? Who?
I'm very curious if Mike Gordon knows this character. He's a big Wonder Woman fan and knows a lot about her history. I wonder if he knows who Blue Snowman is. I'm going to have to hit him up and see if he knows who this character is. I thought this was an odd story myself. Somebody did some digging to find that Blue Snowman character.
Oh, I'm sure people, I'm sure, like you said, Mike Gordon probably does know the character. I don't know old school Wonder Woman that well. And so I just was stunned. I was stunned when they revealed the villain. I am, to be very clear, I am thrilled to now know that this character exists. I'm all honestly insulted that we haven't used her more.
It really feels like DC is trying hard to build a Wonder Woman's rogues gallery.
I mean, if building up a rogues gallery means bringing Blue Snowman back, then they are on the right track here.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman Catwoman number 3. The issue opens up with Helena Wayne in her bat costume on the rooftop of Gotham PD talking to Commissioner Dick Grayson. Dick tells her that an elderly man was found murdered in Florida who had white skin underneath his makeup. Later in the issue, the DNA matches that of the Joker. Selina gets angry at the Joker because he sewn antlers on the heads of a family. Selina and Helena have dinner together, and Helena tries to tell her mother that the Joker was found dead. Now, Selina ignores her and talks about inheriting the Wayne fortune, and then how she was abandoned in a dumpster with nothing, and now she's the richest woman in the world. Batman gets fed up with Joker for killing Paul Fleshman and leaving a message on his tongue, stating that I'm hiding with Batman and Catwoman. Batman says he's done. If Phantasm wants you, she can have you. We see that the Phantasm goes after Selina Kyle, and Catwoman finds the Joker in a safe wearing a suit made of money. He wants to give Catwoman a pearl necklace and also tell her about his next mass killing at an ice rink. Now, the issue ends with Helena telling her mother that she went to the Joker's apartment in Florida and found no clues. I like the series, Cletus, but it has a lot of jumping around in it that I don't like, which makes it more difficult to follow the story. It was hard for me to recap this sucker.
I think especially like in their prime interactions between Catwoman and Joker seemed to have, I interpreted to have happened before the Phantasm era, right? That's how I interpreted it, at least. Timeline-wise?
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And that's hard to follow. It's hard to figure it out because it's not clear.
I think that's a fair point. I think it is a little bit hard to follow all because there are multiple. It's not just one time jump. Feels like we're on it. We're following at least three different eras. I still give the comic the benefit of the doubt. It still feels like there's a clear purpose of where they're going. Like the first two issues, each issue that we've read has made the last one make a little bit more sense. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's a confusing puzzle, but I do feel like he's putting the puzzle together slowly, if that makes sense. It's not like he's sort of just haphazardly using multiple timelines.
I agree with you. And I think from the way it's been reading, it'd read much better as a graphic novel than individual issues
for the story. I agree completely. Yeah, I this one in particular, I feel like some of the other ones we reread, you know, still worked as issues. I think all of these mini series that he's done, for the most part, they all work better, you know, as graphic novels, which isn't surprising. But some of the other ones that he's done, I feel like still work issue to issue. Like Strange Adventures works issue to issue. It's just so good, and you're so interested in the story, it's driving me nuts that we have to wait a month every time. This one, I really think, I also really want to read the next issue of this, but it's just, I think it's one of those ones where it just makes more sense, because like, I have a better understanding of the first issue having now read the next two stories, you know, and I feel like this one will make more sense when we read issue 4 and so on and so forth, because I think we're starting to get a much clearer idea of what this comic is really about. There's some serious guilt going on with Selina, and we're kind of seeing it in each of the different timelines, right? We see the joke. What I loved with what King did with the Joker when she finds him in the safe is how insidious it is without him act. He doesn't do anything abhorrent or violent in that scene, right? And yet it's still one of the darker things I've seen the Joker do, because he just straight up tells her, he's like, hey, I'm going to kill a bunch of people, and you can tell Bruce, and you could stop it, and nobody will get hurt. But
then he'll be like, well, how did you know this, Selena? And it'll ruin your relationship. Or you can try and stop it and you won't be as successful because you're not Batman. Or you can just say nothing and let all of these people die and keep living your happy life. And that was just so brutal.
That was. And that's exactly the kind of thing Joker would try to, this the kind of situation he'd like to put Batman in, a situation like that. And you see him with Catwoman in that situation. And of course, she's not going to do the exact same thing as Batman would. So it's interesting to see what her decision is going to be. Because yes, that could definitely ruin her relationship.
And I think it's interesting because we saw when we go to, I guess, the present or the future. I don't know. What do we want to call it if we consider old Selena to be the present of the story? Anyway, the older version post-killing the Joker, she doesn't seem to be, I don't know, like she's talking about how she kind of rose from nothing to becoming the richest woman in the world. But doesn't it seem, I don't know, at least to me, it felt like something that like it was weighing, like everything that had happened was weighing on her. To me, at least.
I agree with you.
Rise to that point, but what did it cost her?
Yeah, exactly. And you can see it when she's having dinner with Helena that she doesn't want to talk about it. So she was clearly avoiding the conversation with her.
I'm really interested in where this is going because, like, we thought initially this was going to be a Phantasm story, and it sort of is, but it's really a Catwoman Joker story, which is that's the thing that I like. You know, I can get behind Joker stories when they're doing something new. And it's not that we haven't seen the Joker and Catwoman team up before, but this is kind of different, right? Like, this feels like a different kind of story. And it's not just the usual, the Joker's going to do something bad this time, but this time it's real bad. And what will Batman do? And he just does the same thing he always does. Like, that's why I sort of get sick of, you know, seeing the same Joker story every time, because it always feels like the same thing. This one feels different to me because it's not really, like, it is technically a Batman Joker story, but it's not really. It's really more of a Selena and Joker story, and that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I'm interested to see how this plays out. We're only on issue 3, and we've had a lot happen so far. So
I know, that's the crazy thing. Like, where is this going to go for 9 more issues? That's the thing I'm, like, really fascinated by.
Yeah, because there's a lot of story to still tell.
There's a lot. It's just, like you said, so much has already happened. Like, where does it go?
That's why I like King's writing. He keeps you guessing.
He really does.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Future State Catwoman number 2. The issue opens up in Alleytown, Gotham, several years from now. Cheshire Cat waits as the train pulls into a tunnel. She blows up the power to the rail, and the train stops inside the tunnel, away from the magistrate's eyes. We see Talia al Ghul freeze Bruce Wayne, and they quickly try to secure a way to freedom. Bruce notices that Catwoman is on board the train also. There's a quick reunion, and then the two go their separate ways. Catwoman goes to rescue the kids, and Bruce goes with Talia to join the resistance. And Catwoman asks Bruce, "When this is done, Bat, how will I find you?" And Bruce answers, "Just steal something important, Cat." I thought that was kind of cool. I enjoyed this as much as I did the first one. Yeah, it was one of the better Future State stories, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I would agree it's in the higher tier. I would say it's certainly above the average mark. I have to say, I don't necessarily think because it's a great comic, but because it's competent. Like, that's where I think the bar for some of these Future States are at. It's just, there are some that are just real bad. And this one is, at least you can follow the story. First off, that's a major jump. And it's fine. It doesn't really take any, I didn't think really took that many risks narratively, which is fine. It's only a 2-issue story. It's just, it's okay. And by just being like an okay, acceptable comic, it just like knocks some of these other ones out of the park.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. I really enjoyed it, probably because There's some that I really didn't like, and this is much more enjoyable to read than some of the others.
No, I agree, but that's, again, I think speaks to the lack of quality from some of the other books.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Future State Immortal Wonder Woman number 2. The issue opens up with Wonder Woman running away from the Undoing, trying to find if anyone still exists. We get a flashback to the last battle of Superman and Darkseid. Superman sacrifices himself to stop Darkseid so Wonder Woman can live. Wonder Woman comes across the Spectre. Without a purpose, the Spectre task is fulfilled, and Wonder Woman helps him move on to the next life. Next, we see the Undoing come for Wonder Woman. And once the Undoing takes Wonder Woman, she begins to glow. She wakes up, puts her bracelets together, and a big bang of light happens. Is this the beginning of a new reality? Eh, the story was okay.
It was fine. Again, it was fine. The artwork was pretty good. I didn't totally get the point, though. It was just some of these. I think the thing that frustrated me with Future State was some of these stories. They didn't seem to have a point to them, or like they're like, hey, tell a story about something that happens in the future with a character, but there wasn't a ton of thought or depth put into them. So they just sort of throw something random out. And there's way too much going on, Drew, that we don't see that makes it when it's only a two-issue story, you're just like, okay. That's how I felt when it ended. I just was like, okay. She died and restarted the universe, I guess. That's cool. I didn't really care. Because there was so much missing from the story. Because it was only a two-issue story in which we jumped into the end of, that there wasn't enough there for me to care about it.
I agree with you, because I didn't really care about it either. It was okay. It did feel like I wasted my time reading it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was sort of my problem with it. Like you said, it's not poorly written. The art's pretty good. There's not enough story in these two issues for me to care about it. And so, like you said, it feels like a waste of time. It feels like if this was all you could do, then why do you even do it in the first place? Just don't put this issue out.
Agreed. All right. And this one had a backup story. It was the second part of the Nubia story. Nubia has been taken prison by Grail. And we learn that the seventh artifact that Grail needs for the key is Nubia's tiara, or according to her Aunt Nancy, her crown. Grail summons Cersei from her imprisonment. And if Cersei helps her get the tiara crown from Nubia, Grail will be free. Now, when Cersei tries to use her magic to remove the crown, Nubia gathers strength and power from Yushin, one of the Amazon patrons. At the end of the story, Aunt Nancy calls Nubia guardian, just as Yushin did. And I was curious if they were the same person.
It seemed to be implying that they were.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was wondering if you agreed with me on that.
Yeah, I mean, at least from what I interpreted from it.
This second part, compared to the first part, gave us more context of what was going on, I thought. And it was interesting. It feels like this is going to continue on at some point in the future.
I agree. I have to admit, Drew, I felt like I'm not going to lie, I didn't totally care for either issue of this story for Nubia, but it felt like she should have been the lead story. If I'm being completely honest with you, there was clearly more purpose to this story. There, like you said, this seems to be suggesting that they're going to do more with her character. Why the hell wasn't she the lead on this title? Like, the Wonder Woman story was, to me, so clearly a backup story. And it was the lead story. You know what I mean? Like, this should have been, again, my opinion on the quality aside, this clearly should have been the lead title.
I agree with you. I think it should have been too. And honestly, they could have just filled the whole issue with just the Nubia story. They could have fleshed it
for it too.
They could have fleshed it out a lot more, make it even more interesting.
Absolutely. Well, I think it was done a disservice by being the backup first off. So, and then on top of that, then it's not getting a whole issue to really expand. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't totally care for it. There's just, they crammed, this clearly had enough to be a full story. And they crammed it down into two issues, and it just sort of never really clicked with me. It was fine. It just, it didn't have enough room to breathe to become as good of a story as I would have liked. But again, this clearly should have been the lead story. If anything, make the Diana one the backup, or again, just don't do her. You've got two other Wonder Woman doing their stories. It's fine. It's only 2 months. We'll all live if Diana's not the main feature for a couple months, right?
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, I don't ever remember reading about Nubia before. I'm kind of curious what her origin is and how she fits in with the Amazons. Because the two-part story kind of got me intrigued on how she fit in with the rest of the Amazons. So that's something I'd like to see in the future. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State Nightwing number 2. The issue opens up with the magistrate surrounding Arkham Asylum, Nightwing's secret HQ for the Resistance. The magistrate has tanks and a news crew ready to publicly take down the Resistance. We see Nightwing fires an EMP, knocking out most of the magistrate's technology, at least momentarily. And when the magistrate sends in troops, Nightwing and the next Batman are able to take them out. When the magistrate is able to get their equipment back online, they fire missiles at Arkham. And before they can fire a second round, the Resistance shows up. Batgirl, Cassandra, Huntress, Talia al Ghul, Oracle, Robin, the Tim Drake Robin, Two-Face, Man-Bat, and Batwoman. Now, Nightwing and the next Batman are able to escape Arkham with the Batmobile, and Peacekeeper 6 chases after him and wrecks their vehicle. There's a battle with Peacekeeper 6, and Nightwing is able to stop her and catches everything on video using his nano swarm cameras. I thought one of the most intriguing things from this issue was the Resistance lineup. Because we have Batgirl as Cassandra, but you have Barbara Gordon as Oracle in this.
I was interested in that too, Drew, because that made me wonder if that's a look into DC's plans. I almost wonder if that's what they're planning to do, where Barbara is Oracle, but she's still Batgirl, in the sense that she's Oracle but dresses up as Batgirl.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. I personally am of the opinion that she's best as Batgirl. That's completely subjective. But we'll see. I legitimately am kind of curious if that's what they're going to do with her character. I'm going to be honest, I did not care for the color scheme of it.
So, yeah, I agree with you there. I was happy
purple
to see.
Black is just so good with the yellow. I mean, it's just such a good, that's such a good color scheme. It's really hard to try and do something different.
Yeah. What I find interesting is they've been putting an emphasis on Talia al Ghul too. And I'm wondering if they're trying to bring her into the Bat family because of Damian.
It's kind of what it seems like, right? Cause she pops up on two different lineups over the course of the books that we're reading this week. And she's in both of them. And I thought that was interesting. Cause she doesn't really, they don't do much with, I think, what is it? Catwoman's the only one that she's actually doing anything meaningful in the story.
Right.
But I find it very interesting that she clearly is heavily involved in the Bat family in this Future State setting.
Which makes me wonder if they're going to involve her more in the regular titles now. Is she going to be less of an antagonist then, or what they're planning on doing with her? I'm just kind of curious. And how that's going to work with Damian. It just seems like they're trying to bring her back in, be more of Damian's mother, be more visible, maybe have more interactions with Bruce, I don't know. But we clearly see in the Catwoman story that, you know, Bruce and Selina are still an item. Interesting. The other thing I thought was interesting is Two-Face. What is Two-Face doing there?
Well, that one I found particularly odd because we saw that he was part of the Arkham Knight lineup, which the best, the less remembered about that, the better. But still, nonetheless, he was like a high ranking official, so to speak, within that. It wasn't like he was just like one of the side goons. So I thought that was a little odd that he was, I don't know, maybe he was, he like their representative? Like, we'll send you one of our best sergeants. Get out there, Two-Face. I can't dismiss the possibility.
Yeah. And I thought Man-Bat was an odd choice too, especially since he's been with the Justice League Dark. So,
but we have seen him in a heroic role, and if you're just trying to throw out, you know, a wide variety of Bat family characters, this sort of makes, he honestly makes more sense than Talia.
That's true. And I think he has his own series going on right now. Because I saw that Man-Bat number 2 was coming out in a week or two. So, not an issue I really care to follow, but I just noticed it was out there.
I didn't even know that was out there.
So, and I have no idea what it's about. I just noticed that in a week or two, DC's putting out Man-Bat 2, and I was like, nah, I think I'll pass on that. All right, moving on to our next title for this week. Future State Shazam number 2. Billy is guarding the Unkindness. He's made a deal with Neron. Neron has split him into two. Billy guards the Unkindness while Shazam is helping protect the Earth. Only, we find out that Neron tricked Billy, and it's Neron who's controlling Shazam. Vixen is questioning Shazam, and we learn that he has killed Thunder, Ryder, Slade, and John Jones. When Shazam escapes again and kills, Spectre shows up. Spectre takes him to the Justice Society of America's HQ, and the Spectre learns how Billy was tricked by Neron. And while Spectre is learning the truth, Shazam stabs him with the Spear of Destiny, killing him. Deadman shows up and takes control of Shazam. He forces him to say the word Shazam, and Billy transforms back. The Unkindness is free and with the powers of Shazam. And to be continued in the Future State, Black Adam, which we reviewed in episode 225. It was the backup to Future State Suicide Squad.
Woof.
We did not like the first one. The second one was no better.
What the hell were they thinking, Drew? Who wanted to read this story? I don't understand this whole thing. The Teen Titans part of it at least makes some sense because they're clearly using it to springboard into a past timeline and be like, well, this is what we're trying to prevent. But everything else surrounded to it is just stupid. Ugh.
It felt like it was the setup for Black Adam story.
But you didn't need to set up that Black Adam. I'm sorry, you really didn't. That was such a, it was so far in the future. And it was so disconnected from anything. This didn't give me any real extra context. But if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, it didn't. We did not need this story for the Black Adam story. The Black Adam story was fine on its own. We didn't need to know where the Unkindness came from, really, for that story. Yeah.
No, and it's just like, why did you need a murderous Shazam? And it's weird because the Shazam clearly still, like, wants to do good. And they, like you said, he's corrupted by Neron. God. This was so bad. So bad. I'm just so frustrated because there were so many different things they could have done with the Future State Shazam story. They could have gone anywhere. And instead, it's not even really, like, he is the main character, but it's not really Shazam's story, right? It's really just the connective tissue between, inexplicably, the Flash, Teen Titans, and the Black Adam story.
Yeah.
It's the least important part of that whole bizarrely connected series.
We don't really need to have these stories connected anyways.
But honestly, they were all bad with the exception of the Black Adam one.
Yeah.
Which honestly wasn't that great either, but it was just so freaking weird that I didn't really mind. A weird female version of Booster Gold and Blue Beetle shows up at the end of that story inexplicably when it's a magic story. I mean, that's phenomenally dumb. I love that. The other one, so the Flash one was horrendous.
Yes,
it was. The Teen Titans one I didn't think was that great, but I could forgive it a little bit because it tried a little bit harder, and there was also clearly a better plan. You could see a more of a plan behind it, that they were actually using it to set something else up. And I was okay. Like, I didn't care for the story, but I could see what they were trying to do with it. This Shazam one, there's no point, and it's terrible.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State Superman Worlds of War number 2. The issue opens up in Smallville, and the girl that stated Clark Kent saved her life wants to see the farmhouse where he grew up. The boy she had been talking to asked how Clark saved her life, and he hands her an article that Clark wrote about a man from World War II and his struggles through life. Though it looked like he died with nothing, he accomplished a great many things. On War World, we watch as Superman fights. Eventually, Mongol gets angry and comes into the ring himself. Mongol says, "Pathetic. You did not bloody a single fighter. Why bother with the sword at all?" And Superman states, "The fighters weren't the target, it was their chains. And I won't leave until I've broken every chain on World World." On that day, when every slave is free and every life you've taken is paid for, then I'll go home. And apparently, Mongol keeps killing Superman and resurrecting him to fight again and again. Back in Smallville, the girl and the boy find the spaceship that brought Superman from Krypton to Smallville. And then we get the to be continued in Future State Superman House of El number 1, which is on sale next week.
I quite liked the newspaper article. It never made sense why they had to do the War World setting, though. None of that seemed connected to anything. That seemed completely arbitrary to me.
I agree with you. I mean, it didn't have anything to do with the story that was going on in Smallville.
It had nothing to do with it. It was, I mean, again, by the end of that story, and they reveal, like, he keeps killing Superman, and he keeps bringing him back, and Superman's plan is, you know, blah, 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 whatever. It was like, okay, that's a pretty Superman-esque thing to do, I guess. But it had, again, it said it could have been, it just was arbitrary. It could have been anything. Superman could have been doing anything. Anything. I just didn't understand why we needed to dress him up in his underwear and have him fight like a barbarian. Because, again, there was no point. That was so clearly not the point of the story. It was so clearly, again, focusing on the human side of Clark and how he's able to help people, not just because he's the most powerful being in the universe, but because he is who he is as a person. That was clearly the point of both issues. And that's great. I quite like that, Drew. Why the hell did he need to be dressed up like a barbarian? It just had nothing to do with the story that was actually trying to be told.
I agree with you. And I thought the backup stories were going to connect to it somehow, and they definitely didn't do that. We had the Mr. Miracle story. There was a cosmic armada near War World, so Mr. Miracle decides to send a distress message to Earth, specifically to Superman in the Fortress of Solitude. Mr. Miracle goofed somehow, using the last of his mother box energy to send the message, and created a temporal causality loop, sending the message back to himself. And then he's like, "It's going to take a miracle to escape War World alive." I was like, what was the purpose of the story?
I couldn't believe that that's how the story ended, Drew. What did it accomplish? I'm hoping that the new series that they're doing with this character is somehow connected to this, because otherwise, like you said, what was the point of the story?
No, and I figured him teaming up with the other characters we saw in the backup stories, we're going to somehow rescue Superman or something, and that definitely didn't happen. It was, I don't know what the purpose of the story was. All right, next we had the Midnighter story. It does not take Midnighter long to figure out that this is not really his husband, Apollo. Midnighter shoots him and discovers it's some sort of robot. After a bunch of talking back and forth, some sort of temporal zapping where Midnight becomes a kid again and then grows old, a younger Midnighter appears and they work together to destroy the robot. One of the Midnighters goes to War World in the future and the other one back to Earth to tinker with the robot. The end? Nope. The next chapter will be in next month's Action Comics 1029. I'm so excited, Cletus. I can't, oh man, this was a hard story to read. It was hard to follow too.
It was hard to follow. I didn't care. I kept thinking it was going to end, and then it kept going, and then it kept going. I was like, oh my God, please end. Just end.
I know. I was the same way. And then when I...
It kept true. This comic was so long. I just couldn't believe it kept going. Every page I turned, I was like, how? How is there more story to tell?
You weren't the only one. And what was funny was I was reading this story. We were waiting for Jordan's volleyball game to start. So I'm reading this thing. It's like, am I to the end yet? Am I to the end yet? Am I to the end yet? It just kept going and going and going. And then when I got to the end of it, it said the end? Nope. I was like, no, don't be in Action Comics. That's when we use a review. Man. All right. And the last story we had in this was the Black Racer. The Black Racer is on the fourth ring of Warworld. She just wanted revenge, but is now leading a rebellion. We see that the Black Racer busts through the third ring where people are having dinner. A robot chases her to the second ring where the control room is, and she shoots it out with one of the robots there and then flies away to the first ring. The end? This one didn't say there was a continuation, but we can only hope it's the end.
I am just, it's incredible to me what an enormous waste of time overall all of these backup stories were.
Yeah.
What? I mean, just an unbelievable waste of time.
I was dreading reading this because it was so long. These backup stories are, I don't know, it's just making the comic too long, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Future State, The Next Batman, number 4. The issue opens up with the next Batman in church getting choked by the same couple he just saved from the magistrate. Though the husband was not very happy that the next Batman was going to turn him over to the police. The next Batman easily overcomes the husband, and the husband tries to convince the next Batman that the murder was all on him, but the next Batman insists he's turning them both in. The next Batman steals a van and tries to get the couple to City Hall. The magistrate chases after him, and the husband decides to sacrifice himself to save his wife. He jumps out of the van and then uses an explosive to take out the magistrate SUV following them. The next Batman swerves to avoid a pedestrian and they crash. And when he gets out of the van, his mother is there with a gun. He throws a batarang at his own mother, and getting past the peacekeeper, the next Batman delivers the wife to the waiting police officer at City Hall. Later on, Jace goes to the hospital to visit his mother, and the rest of the Fox family, especially Luke, thinks he's drunk or high.
I know that we're getting more with this character, which is good, because, again, and I feel like this was the downfall of so many of these Future State ones. It just didn't feel like enough of a story to me. Like, I didn't feel set. There was no conclusion. I didn't feel real conflict with the magistrate. Like, they're there. They're certainly antagonistic in the story, don't get me wrong, but didn't feel like a huge payoff to me.
No, and I agree with it. This interested in the next Batman, but I wasn't interested in this story per se. And
it just felt to me too much of a self-contained story, which, for example, to be fair, the Wonder Woman one was also, but hers was so interesting and the world building that they did was so well done. Whereas this one was really just like okay, let's do a new Batman story, but literally just have it be like your typical run-of-the-mill, like you're in the middle of a run kind of story. You know what I mean? like they took it almost literally and were like, okay, we're just going to jump into it and just tell a normal story as if this character's been ongoing for 50 issues. And that was what was odd to me, was that there was just not a huge attempt at world building, which, to be fair, a lot of the Batman books were all kind of collectively doing together. But it just, there was just nothing special or particular about this story. It was literally just like another day on the beat, essentially.
Yeah, and they included the Fox family in it, but it didn't really feel connected that much to the Fox family. I think that they could have done a more personal story connected to the Fox family that I think could have done, they could have done that was more tied to what was going on with the magistrate instead of trying to save this couple and then turn them into the police. We get the second part of the Batgirl story in this. Stephanie and her friends start a riot in the mess hall so that Cassandra could go rescue Barbara. And when Cassandra finds Barbara, she's hooked up to some machine. Cassandra and Barbara make it to a computer where Oracle can send a message out to the people. The Resistance shows up and they help everyone escape, including the villains. And we see that Dick and Barbara are back together again. And they nest, as Cassandra puts it. And then we see Stephanie and Cassandra mend old wounds.
This was fine, I guess. I don't know. I didn't really care. That was just another one that was like, okay. Another one also that really, again, I made this point, I think, last week or the week before. It stands for all of them. They've never done enough to convince me that the magistrate is actually a threat. Literally every single time any of the Bat characters do anything, they succeed. So it's baffling to me that there would have been a point where they didn't. They would have all had to have catastrophically failed, Drew, all at the same time, and then never again fail. I cannot get over the hump on that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I'm also kind of curious, why was Barbara hooked up to that machine? They never explained that at all.
No, I mean, why would they?
We get another backup story in this with the Gotham City Sirens. It's the second part of that one. The issue opens up at Slam Bradley's speakeasy for masks. The magistrate had attacked and Catwoman was injured. Poison Ivy takes them upstate from Gotham, and Poison Ivy tends to Catwoman's wound. And the women decide to hang out for a couple days while Catwoman heals. While enjoying their makeshift hot tub, the magistrate shows up and Ivy's giant plant attacks, and the women escape on motorcycles. With the magistrate hot on their tails, their robot friend gives them an important computer chip to take back to the Resistance to help defend them against the cybers. And then the issue ends with 1 month later with Poison Ivy owning D Speakeasy.
Drew, I was just going to tell you how closely I read the first one. I legitimately didn't even realize this was set in the same timeline as the other ones. I just thought it was its own thing.
You skimmed it pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I had a hard time caring about this one, even a little bit.
I understand. Totally understand.
It's not even because it's the worst one. It's like the fourth backup story, and I've already stopped caring by the time I get to it. I'm like, oh, God. When I've already gotten through the Mr. Miracle and the Midnighter and the Black Racer and then, you know, the backup before this one, and then I get to that one, I'm like, okay.
I know exactly.
It's just so hard to, there's just not enough for me to care about to even try to get engaged into it.
Yeah, I know. And you just find them tiring. Because I got to tell you, I'm tired of Future State right now. I'm glad there's only 1 week left of it and we can get back to normal.
It's just frustrating because I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. And we've certainly seen some good ones. But honestly, also some of the best ones that we've read, like in my opinion, the Wonder Woman one is the best, has almost nothing to do with Future State. Like it could have easily just been its own book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Really intent on, I think the ones that have been not, which has been most of them, not great, have been too focused on being about, like, all of the Batman books are about the magistrate, which I understand why. On paper, it makes sense. But the problem is that you're reading effectively the same story over and over and over, and none of them are really developing the story at all, right? They're all just essentially just layering in, by the way, the magistrate is evil because of this, and the magistrate is evil because of this, and look at them fight the magistrate here, and then they're fighting the magistrate here. And you're really just reading the same story over and over, and they're not really doing anything all that interesting with that timeline. Like, I think you could do something interesting and cool with the future state magistrate stuff, and they've just instead told a bunch of standalone meaningless stories that all coincidentally happen to happen at the same time or close to the same time.
Yeah, I agree with you. And personally, I'm just done with it. All right, well, that wraps up our comic book talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Dragon Con 2021 is scheduled for Labor Day weekend, and whether it's an in-person event or once again goes virtual, the Dragon Con Report podcast crew will cover the con right up to the big event.
So sit back with your bucket of rum, dragon's mead, apple pie, or whatever your beverage of choice, and tune in to the latest news, notes, interviews, discussions, and even a dragon tale or two on the Dragon Con Report, a proud member of the ESO Network. Check us out at DragonConReport.com.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman, Season 2, Episode 4, Fair Skin, Blue Eyes. The episode opens up with the False Face Society dealing and manufacturing a new drug called Snakebite. Batwoman interrogates some high school kid who's hanging out in an alley. She tracks down his dealer in the Batmobile. Batwoman has a panic attack and almost gets into an accident before stopping the dealer. An alarm goes off at a jewelry store. When Batwoman investigates, she finds a kid with a missing child poster in his hand. He says nobody cares his brother is missing. Do you care, Batwoman? Commander Jacob Kane has a press conference and offers $1 million reward for any information on who took Kate and how it happened. Luke is very optimistic about finding Kate, and Mary is not. Ryan and Mary team up to find the missing kid. We get flashbacks to when Ryan was 12 years old and lived in a group home. We find out that Ryan loved comics, especially Ghost Kid. And we get a flashback to a lady that offered Ryan candy and comics in her van and then abducts her to be brainwashed as part of a gang. Luke seeks out Sophie to help look for Kate and finds Alice at her condo. Commander Kane checks out a lead on Kate and gets captured by the False Face Society. We see the kid that Ryan is looking for being initiated into the gang, and he's ordered to kill Commander Kane. Batwoman shows up and saves him. At the end of the episode, Ryan meets up with her old girlfriend. She looked familiar, and I was wondering, had we seen her last season, or was she just new and I didn't realize it?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously we saw the young version of her, but I don't think so.
Okay. It may be in another television show I saw her in, too. I just saw her and I was like, wait a minute, have we seen her before? I couldn't tell.
I don't think so. If so, I don't remember it.
I got to tell you, Cletus, the opening of the show, I thought it was dumb.
I thought the whole episode was dumb, but so I can agree with that.
I just, when I was watching the opening, the kid shooting up the snake bite, what is a kid looking like that just hanging out in an alley? I thought that was dumb.
Also, the way that they're presenting it as like an extreme designer drug, right? Like,
yeah.
Really like high class packaging. And then the guy's just shooting it up in an alley, like a dark alleyway by himself. Like, that's not. They're like trying to have it both ways. They're trying to have it be like a low level street drug, but then also this like high class designer drug. You gotta pick one.
Yeah. And the fact that Batwoman had to hang him upside down, really? Some teenage kid, you need to hang him upside down to scare him? I don't think you need to do that.
I have to emphasize, is high off of his mind.
Yes.
So what is that gonna do?
Yeah,
come on.
Oh man, I did find Ryan's backstory interesting.
I will admit, I found that somewhat interesting. I got the point of what the episode was trying to say, that, you know, that a white girl going missing is going to get more attention from the media and more response from people than a girl like her. Okay, that's true. I'm not going to argue that point. But the show just presents all this stuff as if it's just from like this just holier-than-thou, condescending perspective, as if they're the first person to, like, the first people to ever point this out, and that only they have ever come up with a solution to it. Like, when she's reading the comic that she really likes, so, like, how many times does a character who looks like you ever get saved? All the freaking time, Drew. All the damn time. Are you kidding me? Like, it's just like the writers are, like, insulting the comics that they are writing for. And then the thing that really got me, and I know it really got me too, because the show itself directly contradicts this point. When the Crow Commander asks Ryan how she knew where the boy was, the missing boy was, she's like, "I looked," and then walked away. What? So what that line implies, Drew, is that anytime a police doesn't find a missing person, especially a missing person of color, it's because they didn't look. If you look, you find them.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that the whole central basis of the show, Alice, that they looked for her pretty thoroughly, pretty consistently. You know what they didn't do? They didn't find her. But Ryan looks. And so she finds him. I can't get over that line. I know that it's nitpicking. I understand that. But it's just, that's so condescending. Are you kidding me? That is such a direct, like, if you didn't find this person, it's because you didn't look. Ah, come on. You have to be better than that. You have to be better than that.
I got to say that, some of the issues this show's been bringing up, Black Lightning brings up those issues a lot better.
I agree, because they raise this. I don't disagree with the point that Batwoman is, the writers are trying to make. To be clear, I don't necessarily disagree with that. What I disagree with is their assertion at the end that essentially, if people simply just cared, that all of these people would be found. Again, the implication there, that any time a missing person isn't found, it's because the people simply didn't care enough to find them, which is just unbelievably insulting. Can you imagine watching this, Drew, as a victim of a missing persons case and then getting that line, "Why bother to look?" Oh, God.
Yeah. One thing we talked about last week was Alice and how you stated she is more like a main character of the cast. We saw it more prevalent in this episode. She comes to Sophie's and just hangs out. It's like, why don't you just arrest her, Sophie?
Well, that's the thing. The show is just bending over backwards to make, like, the character so obviously belongs in jail, right? It just has to bend over backwards toward the point where there's just no logic to it anymore. I mean, to be fair, they jumped that shark in season one. It stopped making sense about halfway through season one, how she was able to still keep going on. And they keep adding new things to it. Like initially, oh, she's just really clever because she was raised by a psychopath. And then, oh, just kidding. Actually, she was raised by effectively Ra's al Ghul. She's a world-class assassin. I mean, like, what are we going to get to next? Is she also the world's smartest person too? Was like Lex Luthor her mentor at another point? Does she actually, is kryptonite really effective because she's actually Kryptonian? Like, they've crossed the line so thoroughly with, like, believability with her character that they could literally tell me anything at this point. And I'd be like, sure, why not? It's already dumb. Like, let's have her use magic next year. Why not?
Oh, man. The funny thing is, I could see that happening.
Right?
That's what I'm saying. They've so thoroughly just like gone out the door with that character. Like, just they could literally do anything with her, and all I could do is roll my eyes and be like, yeah, of course she can also do that now. That makes sense.
Oh man. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 4, Episode 2, The Book of Reconstruction, Chapter 2, Unacceptable Losses. The episode begins with a speech from Chief Lopez stating that there is too much blood on the streets. She names all the gang members, Lala for the 100, for the Cobra Cartel, it's Lady Eve, who hasn't been seen since the war with Markovia, and we find out her underboss is reportedly known as Destiny. For the metahumans, Chief Lopez has obtained the next generation DEGs so that their officers are never outgunned again. And we see Gambi do a search for who has a contract to make the DEGs for the Freeland PD, and we find out it's Mono Vista International, a global company. We see a gunfight breaks out in the streets between the 100 and the Cobra Cartel. Lightning breaks it up, but not without getting injured. We also see Lynn shows up because Jefferson is not out there with the girls, and it gives her a chance to test her new metahuman serum. After the gunfight results in the death of a boy, Blackbird forces a treaty between the leaders of the 100 and the Cobra Cartel that protects a stretch of land, the Blackbird Zone, where Freeland's unhoused can safely spend their nights. Gambi is absent when both Jennifer and Lynn try calling him during the gunfight. Gambi is out having dinner with Lauren Caruso, who works for Mono Vista. Lauren is trying to recruit Gambi to work in their security department. Gambi seems to be more interested in dating her, or is it just a ruse to get more information on the DEG guns? Probably a little of both.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems like the right answer. I think it's both.
We see that both Lynn and Jefferson are meeting with their psychiatrist separate. And Gambi and Jefferson get into it back at the HQ. Jefferson is pissed Gambi wasn't available when Jennifer and Lynn needed him. And Gambi was pissed that Jefferson is not using his suit and putting himself in jeopardy. We also get a confrontation between Tobias Whale and Jefferson when Tobias confronts Jefferson in the school parking lot after dark. Jefferson tries to zap Tobias, but the lightning does not affect him. Tobias has upgraded his skin somehow, and he promised Jefferson that he is going to destroy his life. At the end of the episode, Jefferson contacts his guy in the police department and learns who shot the boy during the gunfight. Jefferson beats him up and breaks some bones, telling him to turn himself in. I gotta tell you, my favorite scene in this episode was the Tobias Whale Jefferson scene. That's what I've been looking for a while, is the final confrontation between those two. And I loved how they started it off with that scene.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's promising, too, because I think most fans of the show, I assume, I know certainly I feel this way, would, if the show's going to end, I want it to end with a big climactic fight between the two of them, personally. I feel like most Black Lightning fans would feel that way. And that seemed to be what this was promising, so that's exciting.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Tobias is now unaffected by his lightning, so Jefferson's going to have to do something different to defeat him. So, that's pretty cool. I still don't like the fact that Jefferson's not using his costume right now. I want to see him as Black Lightning, and I'm hoping they don't go 3/4 of the series without him wearing his costume, but my gut feels.
I think we're getting close to the end of that arc.
Good. I hope so.
Speculation. I certainly could be wrong. I think what's interesting. So what I find most interesting is Tobias threatening to ruin his career, his life, which I'm sure he will, or at least try to do. But what I found really interesting was that he doesn't even really like Jefferson's kind of doing it for him. Like he's unraveling so much over the death of his friend. Which makes sense. You're just kind of seeing him lash out. Like, he's just so sick of all these injustices that he's experienced, that have, you know, his close friends and loved ones have experienced, that he's just sort of lashing out at the world irrationally now. And see, again, that's one of those things where, like, like you said, this show is pointing out all of these things. Like, Black Lightning's mad about a lot of the same stuff that Ryan is mad about in Batwoman, but the show just shows it in a way that, like, isn't just standing on a soapbox preaching at the viewer, right? Like, they're, to me, they're communicating the same message, that people shouldn't have to deal with some of the stuff that people are dealing with in Black Lightning, right? And it's not just the superhero stuff, but just, like, the police persecution and the living conditions and all that, like, the way the sort of gangs and crime is sort of holding the community down, and how that's propagated by, you know, people higher up are kind of encouraging that to kind of keep everybody down. All of that is really interesting, and they're doing it in a way that isn't standing on a soapbox, and yet still clearly, to me, clearly communicating those issues.
That's because they're showing us and not telling us. You're right. It's not like they're preaching at us. They're showing us what is going on and how the characters are dealing with it, instead of being soapboxy about it. Instead of telling us that, hey, you're not looking for or missing people.
Well, that's the thing. I think the show is a better understanding that it's a television show meant to tell a story, that you can use that story to communicate real life issues and problems that you want to see society address. I have no problem with that, Drew. No problem at all. In fact, again, I agree with a large majority of it. So I think that's the problem that I think Supergirl has struggled with a lot recently. Batwoman is struggling with, where it's just, they forget that the main goal, in my opinion, again, subjective, is to tell a story. And it becomes mainly just them on a soapbox just telling you how society should be operating and living their life. And it's like, okay, but what about the story? Like, do you want to, like, should we just stop having the actors show up? Do you guys just want to sit on camera for an hour? And sometimes it kind of seems like they'd prefer that.
It does, doesn't it? I'm really enjoying Black Lightning right now. It's really getting interesting, and you can tell that they're moving towards the end of their story. This, you can tell it's the last season, and they're planning on wrapping some stuff up.
I know, and I like that. I'm not obviously not happy that necessarily the show is ending, but I like that it's, honestly, it's utilizing its final season far better than Arrow did. I thought Arrow just kind of fell in love with its own mythology a little too much. And not that there weren't good episodes in Arrow's final season, but it felt too much just kind of like they essentially, the final season of Arrow was just a victory lap, it felt like. It didn't feel like it was particularly concerned with telling much of a story. It basically was just congratulating itself on being a TV show.
It didn't feel like that.
And that's not what Black Lightning is doing. Black Lightning is like, hey, we've got a story to tell. Now, granted, it does have the advantage of being, in some ways, being a shorter show, so it's got a more concise story to wrap up. Some of that also has to do with the quality of writing that has been consistent throughout the show that Arrow was not as consistent with. So there are some advantages that the show has in that regard, but still, I like the way that they are approaching this final season. Like you said, it is clearly building towards a big climax between who you would expect the climax of the show to be against. It's continuing to develop characters. We're kind of seeing them continue to grow and see where they end up as people. You know, we're seeing the daughters kind of developing into their own individual heroes. Not that they weren't individual, but we're seeing even more of that independence this season, even compared to more, even it started last season. We're seeing even more now. And you can kind of see, like, what the life looks like beyond Black Lightning.
Yep. All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah. So I was, for my shout-out this week, I was watching the most recent Nintendo Direct, because it's sort of just like a thing that Nintendo does to announce upcoming games for their consoles. And I was surprised. I didn't know that this was in the works, Drew. I didn't know if you had heard of it. There's a DC Superhero Girls video game coming out. obviously I am not the target audience for that, but for any of our listeners that have got any daughters or granddaughters or something like that, or grandsons too. I mean, it's, you know, it's just for younger kids. DC Superhero Girls Teen Power is apparently a game coming out. It looked like sometime towards the end of this summer. If you anybody's read any, like, I used to get the they put out some graphic novels that I got from my little sister, you know, when she was in elementary school, and honestly she probably would still enjoy them now. It's very much that same kind of art style and setting where it's like all of the DC female superheroes, but like set in high school. So you've got Wonder Woman, you've got Jessica Cruz, which is pretty cool, Batgirl, Supergirl, all that, but they're high schoolers kind of fighting crime. It's kind of, it's interesting. I don't know, like I said, I know nothing really about the game because it's not coming out for a while, but it was kind of cool to see that they're putting a game out for that. I hope, I have no idea again how good it'll be, but I hope it's successful because I'd love to see DC start to put more games out and appeal to a wide range of audiences too.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to hear. All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about this show I've been watching on Netflix with my son called Henry Danger. It's a superhero show, and it's pretty stupid, but it's funny. And I get a kick of watching it with him. And I got some Bazooka Joe bubble gum that we've been chewing while we've been watching the show. Because one of the things they do is they blow bubbles, and it transforms them into their superhero costumes. It's a live action show. It's one of those Nickelodeon shows that are silly, but you know, they're so dumb they're funny. So I've just been enjoying watching that with my 14-year-old. Alright, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Sensational Wonder Woman, Batman Black and White, Batman White Knight Presents Harley Quinn, Future State Aquaman, Future State Batman Superman, Future State Dark Detective, Future State Legion of Superheroes, Future State Suicide Squad, Future State Superman vs. Imperious Lex, Future State Superman House of L, and Generations Forged number 1, and of course Batwoman, Black Lightning, and Superman and Lois. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman,
all the world is waiting for you. Power you possess in your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.